This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Cable, iPods, DVDs, DVRs, video games, and the internet are all taking a bite out of the ratings of the major broadcast networks. Bill Carter's new book, Desperate Networks, looks at how the networks have battled for hit shows and ad revenues over the past few years, years that saw the ending of Friends and NBC's Thursday night ratings juggernaut. Carter documents the onslaught of reality TV, from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Survivor, The Apprentice, and The Bachelor, to the current powerhouse, American Idol. Carter also reveals the behind-the-scenes stories of how some of the most successful shows were passed up by other networks. Bill Carter covers the TV industry for the New York Times and is the author of the bestseller The Late Shift about late-night TV. Bill Carter, your book starts with Bob Wright, the chair of NBC, trying to find out if Mark Cherry, the creator of Desperate Housewives, pitched his show to NBC before taking it to ABC. And as we all know, it became a huge hit at ABC. Why did you start your book there? What's the significance of this story?
Well, I just think that the Desperate Housewives story is kind of emblematic of the way television works, which is somebody has a good idea and an awful lot of people ignore it. And finally, somebody decides that it's a good idea. And this was a guy who struggled for 7 years being basically unemployed and no one would pay attention to him. And then all of a sudden, he had the hottest idea in the country. And it was interesting that you had a chairman of a network, of a big, you know, media conglomerate, calling this guy, cold calling him on the phone to find out what happened and why his network had missed this tremendous opportunity.
So what did Bob Wright, the chair of NBC, do once he found out for sure that his network did miss the opportunity, that they were pitched before ABC?
He made a few other calls to speak to the people who had not listened to Mr. Cherry to find out, well, why did they not respond to his script the way people at ABC had? And I guess he got some answers, and a few of the people who were involved are no longer there.
So what did Desperate Housewives do for ABC?
It transformed them in ways that only hit television shows can do to a network. It basically made an ice-cold network into a red-hot network, basically overnight, within the first week it was on the air. Of course, it came on the air at the same time that ABC launched another enormous hit, which is very unusual. Their other hit was Lost. But Desperate Housewives was really a statement that ABC was not out of business. They were on the cusp of really being written off, that they could never come back. And this show, because the response to it was so instantaneous, made everyone all of a sudden say, instead of being a network we're not going to pay any attention to, it's the network where everybody has to pay all the attention to because it has the hottest show.
Meanwhile, Fox is killing the networks on Tuesday nights with American Idol.
It's killing the networks pretty much across the board now. I mean, not every night, but Idol has driven so many other shows to success. They push shows behind it, like 24, which has become an extremely popular show. And now they have a medical show called House, which they launched behind American Idol, and that's become an enormous hit. And they can use American Idol like no other show on television. They can stretch it out. When it starts, they run it 3 nights a week. It's always on at least 2 nights a week. And it just vaporizes any competition. It is really quite a phenomenon. I don't think I've ever seen it in all the years I've covered television, a show quite this powerful. And it's quite a weapon for Fox, and they've used it really, really well.
So meanwhile, CBS, NBC, ABC, they're not only competing with cable, they're competing with Fox, and they're competing with UPN and the WB, which have just merged. But those networks, you know, capture a lot of younger viewers, right? They're more niche oriented, but they capture a lot of African American and younger viewers. So what's left for what CBS, NBC, and ABC are fighting over? They seem to be fighting over a smaller and smaller share of the market.
There's no question that it is shrinking, that the market is shrinking. And when they have shows that don't hit, they now are basically out of business. One of the things that's changed in television is you can't get by with mediocre or poor performing shows. They're going to completely tank on them, and they have to drag those shows along. They have to depend on breaking through really on a big scale now for basically most of their income. The lower end shows are complete failures now. In the old days, they could sort of, you know, get by because there wasn't that much competition. Now, if you don't have really successful and very big popular shows, you are in serious, serious trouble.
Is that why so many shows just kind of end after 2 episodes?
That's exactly why. They get a pretty good read right away I mean, ABC put on a show this year called Emily's Reasons Why Not. It was on, they put billboards all over the country for this show. They promoted it to the max. It was on 1 week. They looked at the rating after 1 week and they said, there is no hope for this show. And it was never seen again. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. If it doesn't come out of the gate fast, they can't wait. They can't waste their time. So they'll put a repeat of a successful show on because it doesn't cost as much money and it'll probably do better in the ratings.
It must be crazy making, though, at the networks because you never really settle in. You invest all this time and money into something and then you give up on it immediately.
Yeah, and you can imagine how it is for the creators of a show like that. They put all that effort into it. They've already made 6 or maybe even 13 shows by the time they put one on. And after 1 week, you're out of business. You're canceled after 1 week. The business has become extremely precarious because of that.
Your book, Desperate Networks, focuses a lot on reality programming. Is reality TV outside of American Idol still as hot as it was?
Well, it isn't quite as hot as it was, but I think it's a mistake to write it off because the format really works on a lot of levels for the networks. It's cheaper to produce. There's a skew to it that's very young, which they like. When they work, they get a lot of young viewers. And in the last 6 or 7 years, the big breakthrough shows have been basically dominated by that format. So people are still tinkering with it. Obviously, what's hurt it is there's been endless copies of every successful one. So the originals have lost a little bit of their pizzazz because everybody copies them. And they do tend to run, except for American Idol, they do tend to run their cycle out pretty fast. Like The Apprentice was an enormous hit for NBC, but they had to run it so frequently, 2 cycles a year, that they wore the audience out. There was a couple of shows, new ones this year, that have done extremely well. I mean, this show called Dancing with the Stars, which ABC put on, it's really their only successful new show on ABC this year. So I don't think the format is dying. I think they just have to be original with it and not constantly do copies.
Now, you write about how Survivor was pitched to CBS by its creator, Mark Burnett, and how CBS and Burnett formed an unusual partnership. What made this partnership unusual?
Well, the strange thing about it was Mark Burnett had pitched this show to everybody and really maybe even 2 or 3 times to everybody. And it only got traction when a real unknown underling executive at CBS decided it was an exciting idea. And he went to the boss of CBS, Les Moonves, and he pitched it to him. And Les, listening to the idea, his initial reaction was, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. And he basically threw the guy out of his office. But he didn't give up on the idea. So when this executive named Gen Maynard kept coming back and pushing, Les started to listen to it, but he made an interesting requirement. He said, I'm not going to waste any money on this. I'm not going to lose any money. If you guys can get sponsors to fully back this show before it goes on the air so that CBS doesn't have to pay a penny for it, then we'll put it on the air. And Mark Burnett is a very good sales guy, and he went out with some of the CBS salespeople, and he found advertisers, and they wound up selling the show. So it was a basically fully sponsored show when it went on the air. But that is not a formula that usually is conventional in television. So they had to make a new arrangement. They created a company called the Survivor Company, which was a 50-50 split between CBS and Mark Burnett. And they didn't think this show would work, so they didn't know what was going to happen in the future. And they left it kind of wide open as to what would happen if this thing worked. So it works on an enormous scale. And it's such a big hit that Les Moonves adds an entire episode, 2 entire new episodes to the show and adds commercials to the show. And they have to come to Les and say, well, we can do that, Les, but, you know, it's a 50-50 deal. This guy's going to get half. He's going to get half the advertising revenue. And Moonves was furious because that's never supposed to be done in television. You don't give away the advertising revenue to the creator. But even worse, from his point of view, they hadn't built in a license fee, a fee for the show to come back. So again, Mark Burnett had them by the throat, and they had to give him an enormous amount of money to bring this show back on CBS a second time. Now, it paid off for everybody because the show remained an enormous hit, and everyone made a lot of money.
CBS also had to come up with a contract to indemnify CBS against accidents and injuries.
Yes.
and all kinds. Tell us a little bit about this contract that they came up with for Survivor.
Well, it was interesting. No one had ever done a show with like real people as the center of this sort of action adventure show. And no one knew what would happen. And they were scared because when Survivor had been tried one other time in Sweden, And it was a big hit there in Sweden. But in the first round of it, when they eliminated the first contestant, was voted off the island in the first Swedish show, he went back to Sweden and he committed suicide. And everyone was like, wow, this show must wreck people. So they didn't know how to deal with any of this. So they wrote this elaborate contract to cover any eventuality, like if you were attacked by crocodiles or birds or monkeys, or you caught some tropical disease, or you had to write off rights to everything possible that could happen to you before they let you on. And even then, they went through a lot of these strange psychological tests with these people to make sure that they weren't, like, you know, high strung. And they brought them to California and they put them up in a hotel, and then they would, like, wake them up at 2 o'clock in the morning and put them through these extensive personality tests and to find out if they would, like, fly off the handle. And eventually that became, interestingly, the template for virtually all the reality shows that followed it. They basically made these people give up the rights to everything, including the right to even discuss the show. Once they were off, they were at risk of losing $5 million if they revealed to anyone the outcome of the show. And it really became the template. Every reality show does it now.
My guest is Bill Carter. He covers the TV industry for the New York Times. His new book is called Desperate Networks. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Bill Carter. He covers the television industry for the New York Times. His new book is called Desperate Networks. You describe Mike Darnell as the impresario of reality TV for Fox. What were his big successes?
Well, he had been the guy responsible for some of the most memorable of these outrageous specials that Fox did in the late 90s and the early part of the century, where he brought, these strange video things together, like, the world's greatest police chases and when animals attack and when good pets go bad and outrageous behavior caught on tape. And these are really the most violent or outrageous scenes that people caught on their camcorders and video recorders and packaged together. And they were enormously successful in an audience way, but not in an advertiser way. Advertisers felt they were trashy and sleazy and didn't want to pay for them, but they would generate very big ratings for Fox. And Darnell was like an impresario of this. He loved this material. And the thing about Mike is he's not a guy who puts this on because he's just sheerly being exploitative. He actually likes this. He loves the idea of, grabbing some people and making them a little bit offended or a little bit shocked, or they sitting back from the TV and saying, I can't believe this is on television. He thought that was a great way to boost people's ratings and give Fox a name, which he did. He was very much sort of the signature executive at Fox, because they became known for these kind of outrageous special programs.
And what are some of the problems he ran into with his contestants?
Well, he did a show called The Chamber, which was it was essentially like almost torturing somebody. It was supposed to be a quiz show where they put people in this cage and then they would either turn, really like roast them on a spit. They had flames coming up underneath them. They were shooting them with water while they were asking them quiz questions. And at one point when they were doing the pilot for the show, they had a guy in this cage and he got stuck. And the guy was literally like frying under these flames, and they barely got him out in time before he was like cooked inside this torture chamber. That show didn't work, but it was a perfect show for Mike Darnell because it captured all of his kind of outrageous taste.
Are the networks worried that one day somebody's going to die on one of these reality adventure shows?
Well, in fact, they were very worried about that at Fox. In fact, the executive in charge at that point, a woman named Gail Berman, when she first met with Mike Darnell, one of the first things out of her mouth was, listen, Mike, nobody dies on my watch. And he really had to be careful with Mike, because another idea he had for a show was a guy doing what he called a space jump. He was going to take him in a plane into the stratosphere and have a guy jump out in a parachute. And some people said, well, wait, he might die. We better not do this. He also had an idea to take a 747 that was being made out of, taken out of service and fly it above a desert, where he would then have it point nose down, have the pilot parachute out, have it loaded up with cameras and watch it just plow into the desert. I don't know how you'd make an hour-long show out of that, but they thought it was unsafe.
So other network executives declined on those.
Yes, and interestingly, Fox was considered sort of outrageous for doing this and below the belt. But the network, the other networks, even as they were complaining about what they were doing on Fox, they were trying to hire Mike Darnell. They were like bringing him in for interviews and trying to hire him because, boy, was he generating ratings.
You know, your book is partly about how networks pass on ideas that turn out to be brilliant ideas and end up being successes for competing networks. An example of that is American Idol. You write that no network executives, even the ones at Fox, were enthusiastic about it when Simon Cowell first pitched it.
No, it was a remarkable thing. Simon Cowell came to the U.S. With his partner, Simon Fuller, and they had invented the idea of a contest, an amateur singing contest, and they sold it to British television in basically a half an hour. But they were well known in Britain for their, ability in making recording artists. So when they came to the United States, nobody knew who they were. So they went around, to various networks and pitched this idea. And people listened to them thinking, who are these guys? Are they serious? We never heard of these guys. And they got absolutely nowhere. They were thrown out of meetings. They were really mistreated and dismissed, essentially. And, Cowell is kind of a kind of guy who can shrug that sort of thing off and think to himself, well, you're going to regret this later. So he went back to England and they started the show in England and it was an enormous success in England. And then they partnered up with a big talent agency, CAA, and came back at the networks again. Now, they'd already turned down the idea once and now they have a second chance and they have the evidence that the show is a big hit in England. Well, again, they get turned down by everybody. ABC turned them down twice, even after seeing the tape from the British show, which at least gave you an idea of what it would be and probably gave you an idea of how successful it could be. They were turned down again. Now, Fox had a need for a summer show. Survivor had been a big hit in the summer, so people had seen that you could put reality on in the summer and basically get away from doing repeats at the very least. So they had a need for a summer show, but they didn't want to spend a nickel on this. So when Simon Cowell and Simon Fuller came to pitch the show, they said, as Les Moonves had said about Survivor, if you get sponsors who will advertise in this show and buy the whole show out, then we'll consider it, but we won't spend a nickel on it. We won't pay you at all. And Fox is just sitting on this show. And actually, they gave the British people a 48-hour deadline and said, if you don't get advertisers on this in 48 hours, we're going to just drop the whole idea. And at that point, the show, because it was so big in England, was obviously seen by the British audience. And a very important viewer was Elizabeth Murdoch, the daughter of Rupert Murdoch, who obviously owns the Fox network. Elizabeth Murdoch ran the B Sky B channel in England, which was not where Pop Idol, as it was called in England, was playing. It was playing on ITV. But she saw it every week and could see how big it was and what a hit it was. And she called up her father and she said, Dad, I hear that your network, Fox, is negotiating for this and nothing's happening. You ought to know this is an enormous show. I think you should buy it. So Rupert Murdoch calls his people at Fox and he says, I'm hearing that you guys are negotiating for this Idol show. And they said, well, yes, we've been talking about it. We're thinking about it. And Murdoch just said, listen, stop thinking about it. Buy it. And he ordered them to buy it. And that turned the whole thing around. They would not have done it. I think the 48 hours would have run out because they didn't have the advertisers. And Fox would have turned that show down if Rupert Murdoch had not gotten a phone call from his daughter. And the dramatic effect that that's had on Fox cannot even be measured. It's so enormous. And it all happened by chance, the way a lot of these hit shows happen.
What has it meant for Fox to have American Idol?
Well, there's no show that can come close to it in terms of what an advertiser will pay for a 30-second commercial. The average price for a commercial on network TV might be $200,000, $250,000 for a good show. This show gets $450,000 at a minimum. And for its finale this year, it's getting $1.3 million for a 30-second episode. That's at the Super Bowl level. That's just a gigantic price. So initially, they get the revenue from the show. Secondly, they get this tremendous circulation of viewers. I mean, 30, 35 million viewers a week are coming to their network to watch this show. And at all those times that they do that, Fox can promote their other shows. And that's helped a lot of the new shows that they've added. And as I said earlier, they can also put shows adjacent to American Idol and launch them as hits. So at the same time, the fourth thing that it does is it kills the competition. So if another network is getting a show launched that Fox thinks might be a threat, They'll move American Idol against it and try to crush it. They did that this year with ABC had a show called Commander in Chief, which started off the season doing pretty well. But it was on Tuesday nights, which is when Idol comes on. So when Idol came on at the turn of the season in January, it just crushed that show. And ABC was not probably going to be able to bring that show back now. So it just had an enormous across-the-board impact on Fox that I think is almost unmeasurable. There's never been a show, I think, quite this powerful for one network to use against the others.
Well, Bill Carter, thank you very much for talking with us.
I've enjoyed it a lot, Terry. Thank you.
Bill Carter covers the TV industry for the New York Times. His new book is called Desperate Networks. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.